Chase on this Friday afternoon. Greg Wyshynski covers hockey for ESPN. We last caught up with him at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Greg, how you doing?
Oh yeah, that's right. That was a heck of a time. What an event that was. Boy, oh boy, that was tons and tons of fun. Outside of the crush of humanity that was the Carnival Midway that they had at Cotton Bowl. I'm surprised they made it out of there alive, to be honest with you.
Wow. I had to remind you of that. I thought that was like your big takeaway, was that you got to join us ringside at the Cotton Bowl. Wow. I just thought that was the highlight of the trip.
Yeah, I mean, the highlight for me of seeing you guys there was the way the NHL reacted to me walking on the around the field to come to talk to you guys and treating it like I was, with the KGB or something, trying to steal state secrets or something there.
They had snipers trained on you and everything, Greg.
Yeah, it was very distracting to talk about the Predators, all those little red dots on my my body from the scopes.
It did get hairy there for a minute, now that you bring that up. The Predators just beat the Capitals in Washington, and luckily Ovechkin did not have a monster game. He did have a crazy fluky play which resulted in the goal, but the Predators came away with the victory. But I just wanted to ask you, because he just hit the 40 goal plateau again. He's got what, I think 37 hat tricks, I think, in his career. He's done 40 or more goals in a season 11 times in his career. There's people now out there trying to now say, hey, you know, maybe he gets to Gretzky. When it's all said and done, you know, I think he's taken a lot of hits throughout his career, and he's in a really good place now. I get it. But you know the knock on him early in his career for a good while. What do you think about Ovechkin, where he's at today, and what is the ceiling for him when it's all said and done, in your opinion?
I mean, statistically, the ceiling could be 1,000 goals. I mean,
really?
The way this guy is going this late in his career. But look, it's interesting. We had this discussion on Puck Soup today about his legacy and Gretzky's legacy. Gretzky's always going to be Babe Ruth. Like, Gretzky is synonymous with hockey in the way that Ali was synonymous with boxing, in the way that Ruth was synonymous with baseball. It will always be that Ovechkin broke Gretzky's record, you know, and that doesn't change Gretzky being Gretzky. In fact, I don't think anyone's going to come close to approaching his overall scoring record, the points thing. That said, I mean, you could, even if he doesn't break Gretzky's record, you could say Ovechkin's the greatest goal scorer in NHL history just by when he's done it, how he's done it. You know, Gretzky himself has said, look, I was very fortunate to play hockey in the 1980s. I didn't have to face the goaltending that Ovechkin has to face. I didn't have to face the defensemen or the defensive systems that Ovechkin's had to face. So even if he doesn't get there, and I think the probability is that he will break Gretzky's record, you can say that Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer of all time just based on the era in which he played. Now, two things real quick. First of all, he's on track for 60 goals. Nobody above the age of 32 in the NHL has ever hit that mark. Esposito was 32 when he hit 60-some-odd goals. I think he hit like 70 goals. I think Gretzky's last 60-goal season was when he was like 26, so you have that. And then the other thing, too, is I love Ovechkin. I think he's going to break the record. I think he's the best goal scorer we've ever had. When we get to start talking about this Gretzky record, my heart breaks because of the missed time that Jaromír Jágr had to work stoppages in his career and the 3 or so years that he went to the KHL, because I think this conversation would be a heck of a lot different if Jágr had played his entire career in the NHL. I think he'd be the one that already had broken the record if that were the case.
Who's number two? That's what I want to know. Like, who's number two? Like, who after Gretzky, who do you think we have if we're putting together the Mount Rushmore of the NHL? Who's number two? Who's three? right now?
Well, on the Mount Rushmore argument is an interesting one. I think that you could put, I mean, obviously Gretzky's on there, mm-hmm. and obviously Gordie Howe's on there, and obviously Bobby Orr has to be on there to represent defensemen and what have you. So the question then becomes, do you make the last choice? Yeah, who's the fourth? Is it era specific? I mean,
nope.
Would it end up being Ovechkin or somebody if he breaks Gretzky's record? Or do you feel the necessity to flesh out what hockey actually is and put yourself a goalie on there, in which case, you know, is it Dryden? Is it Brodeur? Is it Patrick Waugh?
Is it Lemieux?
Well, you see, I think if you're doing a Mount Rushmore and you have Gretzky on there, you don't put Mario on there. Even though I think Mario honestly was a better player overall, like Gretzky's the representative of that era,
okay.
And Gretzky's the representative of scoring in that era.
That's
you have
fair.
To have Gordy on there.
Yep.
And you have to have Orr on there. So I think if you're going to put a player from that era on there, you probably put Gretzky over Mario. Even though I am I'm a Mario truther. I think Mario is a better player than Gretzky.
Is anybody today flirting with that conversation, in your opinion?
Well, you need somebody iconic, right? And so, I mean, Ovechkin would be in that conversation if you really wanted to capture what the current state of the game is. And frankly, the other thing about it too is all the guys we just mentioned are Canadian. Right, and I think that it's important if you're going to represent hockey on the Mount Rushmore to indicate that it is an international sport, to indicate that it is the influx of European players that's really made the game great. And so, if you wanted to put a Russian on there in Ovechkin, I would. I mean, I think that's an interesting point of representation too.
Did you see, by the way, the Russian Five? I know it's a different network. You work for ESPN. It was on NBC Sports Network. Did you see the Russian Five, the Red Wings?
Well, I mean, it was in theaters too, so it's not just me.
Fair enough.
Putting over another network. Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was a fantastic piece of work. The filmmaker Gabe, I want to say it's Polsky. He has a follow up film that deals with a Russian Penguins team that's come out. It's the Russian Five one's really good. It's a documentary people should check out for sure.
Predators got a nice win in Calgary. They've been playing really well on the road. I would not want to be David Poile to figure out what the heck to do at the trading deadline, because what if this is their run we've been waiting for? What if they get on a heater right now that could change all the plans? What do you think they're in store for here in, what is it, a little bit over a couple weeks from now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the first question is, what were the plans to begin with? Because when you make the coaching change in season as they did, the plans, for me at least, would be that he thinks this roster is good enough to win, and by any means necessary, we're going to try to create a winner. You know, so like to me, the fact that they did have a couple of guys, unrestricted free agents, they could move potentially at the deadline, was always eclipsed by the idea that they're going to be aggressive and try to make this team better. According to Cap Friendly, they're going to have $10 million of deadline space with the space that they've accrued, with the space that they have. So he's going to have the ability to add to this roster. And frankly, like I said, I think considering the way of the world in the Western Conference and considering the way that the team does seem to be responding a little bit better now than they were when Hines took it over, especially on these recent road wins, you have to imagine he's going to go to the deadline and try to add a piece or two.
Greg Ushinsky is with us from ESPN. So what did you make of the Bufflin news?
Did something happen today, or are we just talking about like this week?
Yeah, this week with everything going on with him.
Oh, I mean, I'm happy that there's resolution. I found the most interesting part of the Bufflin news this week to be the words of Blake Wheeler of the Jets, who is a friend of Bufflin's, had played with Bufflin for years with that franchise. And he had some real poignant stuff to say about, like nobody understands what a guy like Bufflin put himself through to be in this league and to do what he did. I mean, Bufflin's a big guy. He's always been a big guy. It's you know, the way that he played and playing this sport probably took a toll on him that it doesn't take on other guys. So, you know, it was one of those moments where it's really eloquent. He just said, you know, like, you have to respect it when a guy decides that he just doesn't want to do it anymore. And yeah, there are repercussions, and yeah, there are people in Winnipeg that probably feel like he's a villain for the way that things turned out. But you also have to respect an athlete that, you know, just believes it's time to maybe walk away. And I thought that that was a really salient point.
I think what's interesting about him, and I feel like he's not going to play this year, maybe not ever again, but he's the type of player, in my mind, Greg, that the Preds are missing. And if they had that type of guy in the locker room, things might look different. What do you think?
I mean, it's possible. I think in his heyday, he was an indispensable part of some really good teams, especially that first Chicago Cup winner. I mean, you know, an immovable object, a real tough player, a guy that wouldn't be afraid to throw his body around and mix it up and get a little nasty when needs be. But again, like, I think the overall vibe is that it's a different league than it was a decade ago. So maybe that there isn't necessarily a premium on that. That said, you know, the Maple Leafs just made a trade this week for a goalie, which they desperately needed, but also for a guy in Kyle Clifford that is that sort of gritty, mix-it-up type player that they felt their lineup maybe was lacking. So there's still a premium on toughness in this league. I mean, look no further than the Edmonton-Calgary games that we had in the last week as far as, you know, the necessity for guys to step up and be physical when it's necessary. But Buffalo was a rare breed. And I mean, and much like, you know, Brent Burns, a guy who made that transition from forward to defense and became the heck of a player on the blue line.
We haven't really talked to you, obviously, since the Winter Classic and Peter Laviolette, but when you look at the league as a whole, are there some other teams that you think there could be another domino to fall from a head coaching standpoint? Because there are some pretty good ones available now.
Boy, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's so late in the season that it's hard for me to imagine anyone else making a change at this point. I mean, you know, this summer is and this spring are going to be very interesting, not only with the guys that have interim tags on them, but also, like you said, the coaches that are available, whether it's Laviolette, whether it's Gerard Gallant, or any of the other ones that are out there that you could hire without a public relations crisis on your hands. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. I am intrigued by the interim coaches that we have right now. You know, Alain Nezerdine with the Devils has done a pretty good job there, and you start to wonder what his future might be. Rick Bonus, obviously, with Dallas has been playing really well, and if they make a deep run, what happens there? Jeff Ward, I like him a lot in Calgary, but the Flames seem like they're falling off the tracks a little bit right now. So that's part of the equation, too, is how many of these guys that are getting an audition now might end up being the next Craig Berube, not so much in winning a cup, but getting a new contract after the season's done.
Watch out for those fake Twitter accounts, team Twitter accounts. Just what? Be on the lookout. They're pretty good out there.
Oh man, the one that got everybody about the Devils hiring Gallant was beautiful. I mean, they had it right. They had it down to almost having like a check mark next to the Devils' name in their stuff. It was pretty remarkable to see. And they were fooling people like 3 days later too. As a former internet troll myself, kudos. I doffed my cap to them.
It's been years since I've been pulled into the boat, and I got put right over the fireplace with that one. I got mounted and stuffed and mounted. After that one, first time I've been duped in years, but they got me.
Yeah, it was good. It was really well done.
Greg, always appreciate it. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Anytime.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, covers the sport for them. We'll come back. Pick 6 to kick off the fourth and final hour. That's next.